Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2, and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. Summer is over. I didn't have to tell you that, but with the cooler temperatures comes the need for warmth at home. And that can mean portable heaters, the fireplace, and of course, your home heating system. But there's also the risk of a fire in your home. Are you ready if that happens? Well, this is the 100th anniversary of National Fire Prevention Week and the perfect time to talk about keeping your home safe. And joining me tonight are John Donnelly, Chief of DC Fire and EMS, and DC Fire and EMS Captain Lakeisha Lacey. If you have any comments, if you have any questions for the chief or for the captain regarding fire safety in your home, give us a call. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at HFisher, WHUR, or you can find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Chief, Captain, thank you both for joining me. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having us.
So, let me first start with, you know, the simple question. Chief, what is it that people don't know about keeping their homes safe from a fire hazard that may seem so obvious to the professionals?
So I think that that's actually a really good question because it gets to managing risk. But I think what it is that the things that you do every day, unless you're really thinking about them, can cause a fire. So if you use an extension cord and it runs under your carpet or it's sitting and it gets in between your mattresses, that might be good every day for a year. But that next day, it could cause a fire. So you have to be very careful about how you use your extension cords. Or during the summer, you may end up with combustibles, paper, boxes, things like that near your furnace. And when you turn your furnace on for the winter, you may not be aware of that, or you may not be thinking about it, and it's too close, and those catch fire. So there's a lot of little things that you could get away with a lot of the time, but you're not being fire safe when you're getting away from them. It's like checking your smoke alarm. If you're not checking your smoke alarm, you're not sure it's working, and you need it to work when it's needed.
You know, one of the things that just happened, I was talking to my mother just about a week and a half or so ago, and she turned on her furnace for the first time since mid-spring. Mm-hmm. And she smelled a kind of a burning smell. And she became concerned, you know, she turned it off. But I told her, you know, I don't think there was anything to worry about because your furnace has been off for so long. Is that something that happens with all gas furnaces, for example? She has a gas furnace.
So it really depends on how it's being used in the house. Gas forced air, what you're probably smelling is some dust or something that was sitting on or near the burner and coming off. I think if you smell smoke, that turning it off is the right thing to do. And if there is no smoke present, maybe getting somebody to look at it is important. If you smell smoke, it's too big of a problem to have a one-size-fits-all answer. If you see smoke, you should absolutely call the fire department. If you turn it off, the smell goes away, I think you're probably okay calling a service technician. Yes, that is normal with startup, but it's always better to be safe than sorry.
We've had some really devastating fires very recently in DC, apartment fires and the like. Are there concerns regarding apartment complexes that may be different from single family homes?
So the concern in an apartment building is that the fire affects more people. To the extent that it's a smaller apartment building where each unit is individually controlled, it's very much like a home. In a system where there's a central, in a high rise, say, where there's a central heating plant and a central cooling plant, you get a lot less of the related furnace type calls. So it's more like in the apartments where each unit has its own self-contained heater, and they're very much like a home in all the things you have to do to maintain them and the way you treat them.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. This is National Fire Prevention Week, 100 years, as a matter of fact, of National Fire Prevention Week. We are talking to D.C.'s Chief of Fire and EMS, Chief John Donnelly, and Captain Lakeisha Lacey. If you have a comment or a question about fire protection, safety in your home, now is the time to give us a call. Lines are open, as always, up until about 8 o'clock at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. So, Captain Lacey, what kinds of things is the department doing to get the word out for people who, you know, have never had a fire before? It was never a concern. And I think, you know, ignorance is not bliss.
No, ignorance is not bliss. Ignorance is not bliss. But monthly, our fire prevention division of DC Fire and EMS, they go out into the community and they do community education. But in October, we're focusing totally on fire prevention. Totally on fire prevention in the community. We're going out. We're installing smoke detectors. We're educating the community on safety, preparation, planning. If there is an emergency, just like you plan for a medical emergency in your home, how do you plan if there's a fire? What are you going to do when your family gets out of the home? Where are you going to meet up? In the school systems, they teach the children, if you catch on fire, you stop, drop, and roll.
Mm-hmm.
How are you going to get out? If you live on the third floor, what's your escape route? Are you going to go down the back stairs? Are you going to go down the front stairs? Don't use the elevators.
Mm.
That is very important. If you're wheelchair bound, who's responsible for getting you out of the apartment or off the second floor of the home? There has to be a plan. If mom is at work, who's going to get the baby out the house or out the crib? Who's going to get grandma out the bed? So there has to be a plan. If 911 comes and someone's critically ill, there has to be a plan of if someone's ill.
Yeah, and they can't
speak. Yeah, they're bedridden. They can't speak for themselves or they speak another language. We have a lot of citizens here who don't speak English as a first language. There has to be something written, posted, where we come in. Is written, this is John Doe. This is their date of birth. These are their medications. This is what they're allergic to. This is who their doctor is. This is what their ailments are. So we can relay this to the hospital. They know to call the daughter, the son, the next of kin. Someone can be notified where to find this person.
You spoke about education outside of a plan.
Yes.
What other kinds of things are you trying to educate people about? What do they need to know? Equipment?
Absolutely.
So run through that for me.
Okay. So equipment. Is your home fire ready? Do you have fire extinguishers in your home? Do you have fire smoke detectors in your home? Are you CPR certified? Hands-only CPR. If there is a fire in your home and you manage to get your family out and someone has a cardiac event and 911 is en route, are you prepared to administer life-saving measures until we arrive? We teach hands-only CPR in the fire department to not only the citizens here in the District of Columbia, but also visitors.
So let me stop you there. Hands-only CPR, usually, as we know, those who have taken CPR, I have, you know, it's chest compressions and traditionally mouth breathing. But, you know, in an era of the pandemic, I'm sure that things have changed. What impact would hands-only CPR have on someone who needs CPR if you cannot breathe for them?
So let me give a little history.
Go ahead.
Behind hands-only CPR.
This is interesting. I'm not familiar with that. Go ahead.
Okay. So hands-only CPR came about because the survival rate of persons who had cardiac events was down, way down. People weren't willing to help. They didn't want to put their mouths on the innocent bystander no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
The American Heart Association developed a standard of life-saving technique, compressions only. You press fast and you press hard, at least 100 compressions, circulating the blood, compressing the heart. You are this person's heartbeat for them, circulating the blood to the brain, to the heart, to the vital organs, giving them a fair opportunity of survivability. That is enough. The oxygenated blood that's in the body gives them an opportunity to survive, and the survivability of this person escalates.
Mm-hmm.
Well, more so than doing nothing for them.
What we were seeing in the district is that our cardiac survival rates in the city were lower than some of our comparable cities. Mm-hmm. And when we looked at the data, we found that we weren't getting CPR started at the same time somebody called 911. So this is part of a focused effort to not only do the citizen CPR right away, but then we can put, we're putting AEDs in the community, the automatic external defibrillators. If those are available, they can shock somebody. And with any luck, before fire department even arrives on the scene, somebody could have their heart back, heart rate back. And then we can give them medication to stabilize them. They can get into a great cardiac center here in the city.
Absolutely.
And go on and have a full recovery. The survival chances are so much higher when citizens start CPR right away. It's what we should be doing. It's our goal that it happens every time.
Right. And now you speak of the pandemic.
Yeah.
With the pandemic hindering persons' contact with one another in general, hands-only CPR is even more important.
Mm-hmm.
Cardiac events have not stopped.
Yeah.
So with that being said, it's even more important that we give the citizens the opportunity and the fire department continue to educate hands-only CPR in the community, so that you, I, the chief, anyone in the community who may have a cardiac event, a fair chance of survival.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about fire safety, keeping your home fire safety ready. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Byron, calling from Virginia. Thanks for calling, Byron. What's on your mind?
Yes, good evening. First, I would like to thank the chief and the captain for sacrificial services that we can never pay them for, and we're so grateful. Education about fire prevention. I watched a segment a couple of months ago from the Virginia fire chief, and they were alluding that the materials, they were giving us a very shocking warning that the materials that are used in construction of homes and apartments right now are so combustible and flammable that the response time to evacuate a home on fire is down to like 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So I was wondering, is there anything that the fire marshals or the fire departments can do to look at the code of the materials being used in the construction of the home? Because
well, Byron, let me see. Let me see if the chief can respond to that real quick. Thank you so much for your question. And Chief, I do agree that that is a really critical question. We've seen this time and time again.
Yeah. So the code, the building code, allows for a lot of new materials, and it tries to accommodate them. And it really relies on us doing building inspections and things being built to code. But the overarching point of this is that where in the past that you may have had 13, 14 minutes to get out of a house, today you have 5 minutes to get out. That's why this year's Fire Prevention Week theme is plan your escape. And it's a variation of the Edith and exit drills in the home. It really comes down to having a smoke alarm and knowing how to get out. And that's why it's important. I think to Byron's point is you don't ever get out of the way of progress. So the codes have to adapt to that. The materials we have in our house are things we like. and we're not going back to wool coverings, which burn slower. We have polyurethane foams. They're treated. We don't have wood. We have plastics, and all of those things just contribute to the fire. So it's very important that we are fire safe. It's very important that we understand how dangerous a fire is and that we leave right away.
Are cavernous spaces more dangerous than your basic 9-foot ceiling?
When you're saying cavernous spaces,
in other words, we have new construction in this area, McMansions.
Yes,
we don't have. Look, my house is 85 years old. I've got a 9-foot ceiling on every floor, but you know, I have friends who make more money than I do, who have bigger houses than I do, and they have huge open spaces, 15, 18 foot ceilings. Certainly, a fire is a fire, but are there other concerns that you may have if you have more space as opposed to less?
So we would argue that those, as long as they have sprinklers, they're all the same. We know that's not true. Not everybody builds their new houses with sprinklers, and you may not have a house built before sprinkler laws. The volume of space, it just takes the fire longer to advance, but once it advances, it has the opportunity to grow bigger more rapidly. We tell people to sleep with their doors shut because that keeps the smoke products out. Hopefully the smoke alarm can wake them up and they can have a second way out of their sleeping area. So open spaces do contribute to smoke spread, may limit your travel, but single family homes, 25% of the fires, these small single double duplexes, 25% of all fires, but account for 75% of fire deaths nationally. That pretty much follows the trend here in the district. So regardless of whether they're a McMansion or an 85-year-old house like yours and mine, they are all very dangerous if a fire happens in them. They're hard to get out of.
I need to take a break, but before I do, I want to let Ann know that we're going to be talking to her. Also, Tracy on the line from Maryland. We're going to take your call as well. And I also believe we have another phone call. Is that Philip? We'll be talking to that person as well. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Don't forget, you can hear every edition of the Daily Drum Insight segment via podcast on WHUR. It's going to be on our website, as always, after 8:30 tonight on WHUR.com. I'm Harold Fisher. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm. That's on WHUR. This conversation continues on SiriusXM Channel 141 in just a few seconds. Welcome back to the Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We're talking about keeping your home safe from fire. My guests are John Donnelly. He's the chief of DC Fire and EMS and DC Fire and EMS Captain Lakeisha Lacey. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Ann, calling from DC. Thanks for calling, Ann. What's on your mind?
I just have a question. Like, I don't ride elevators anyway, if I don't have to. You know, a lot of places you have to. Shouldn't you have access to the stairways?
What, say that? What's your question about access to stairways?
I mean, in case, like, if I'm going as a fire or something, like, shouldn't that stairway be open to, in case, because you cannot use the elevator if it, in case of a fire.
Yes.
So are there codes?
Yeah, yes. The code is very clear. About where stairways can be locked and where they can't. What you'll find is that you should always be able to get into the stairway to leave a floor, but you may not be able to get off it until you get to the ground floor.
Mm-hmm.
There's some variations in where you can get off depending on the size of the building and some other things, but you should always be able to get into it so that you do not have to get onto the elevator.
That's good to know. Ann, thank you so much. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Tracy. Oh, I guess we lost Tracy. Give us a call back if you can. Before I go back to the phone lines, we left off, Captain Lacey,
yes,
with fire extinguishers.
Yes.
How do you know what is the best fire extinguisher to have for your home? How long do they last? What do you suggest?
I'm going to defer.
Oh, Chief, please, either one.
So what we recommend for the house is a 10 to 20 pound ABC extinguisher. And ABC means it's good on ordinary combustibles, flammable liquids, and charged circuits. It's they can be different types. Generally, they have a powder in them that suppresses the fire, and they make a mess, but they're very effective at what they do. They tell you to spray them at the base of the fire, use a Z pattern, and the fire will go out. You should leave, call the fire department if you have to use one inside your house, no matter what. The way to test them, each one's a little different. They should have a gauge on them that indicates whether they're good or bad, and they should have a year. Each one will have how long they should be between being tested for homeowner models. They're a little different in the commercial setting where they're checked on a regular basis as part of the fire inspection.
Yeah, my listeners to this program know, I think about five years ago, I almost burned my house down barbecuing outside. And you know, thankfully, the previous owners had, I guess, the 20-pound fire extinguishers. These were approximately 18 inches high. And there was one in the basement, and there was one in the kitchen. Now, I bought the house in 2002. At the time, I don't know how old the fire extinguisher was, but we're talking about 5 years ago. So it was at least 17 or 18 years old. And it always read green for being fully charged. But how do you know, you know, short of looking, you know, how long a fire extinguisher should last? And I must say, for those of you listening, and if you've never used a fire extinguisher before, but you've been hearing since grade school everything that the chief just said, they work. they really, I went from scared to, I got this. aside from losing some cheap plastic chairs because of a wayward charcoal briquette, but how old can, I mean, when do they start to go bad?
So they're definitely bad when the gauge says they're bad. I would not trust a metal one more than 10 years, and I would not trust a plastic one more than 5. As you've experienced, though, they may last longer. I would just be leery of them at that. Also, in all cases, keep the manufacturer's instructions around somewhere. They're the ones that are going to be the authority, and they'll be able to tell you that.
Because what I have purchased since then are more modern fire extinguishers that are also more convenient, but these are like large aerosol cans.
Yep.
Yes.
Good idea?
As long as they're ABC rated, I'd say you're okay. Those are probably more along the 2.5 to 5 pound range.
Right.
But they'll work.
Okay. Yeah, I've got one basement.
And they'll come with the expiration date on
it. It should.
When I get home, I'm going to look again. I have one in the basement, one on the first floor, and also one in the linen closet on the second floor.
Mm-hmm. So a quick note about fire extinguishers. If they're in your house, let's get everybody out first.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you're in a space where it's safe to do it, you could go ahead and use it. But because fires advance so rapidly, if the fire extinguisher doesn't put it out, you may not be able to get the rest of the people out. It's more important to get out of the house than it is to put the fire out. I think they're really great for the situation you described.
Yeah.
I'm a little scared of people using them inside the house because of how rapidly the conditions change, although there are circumstances where they're exactly right.
Well, this was outside, and it happened really fast.
You can imagine.
Yeah, this was outside, and it happened really fast. And as I said, I went from scared to I got this.
Yeah.
But initially, it was, you know, it was OMG, because the fire and the plastic chairs caught so quickly.
Yeah, I have to remember a lot of people also don't read the instructions. They say the fire extinguisher don't work. Well, you have to pull the pin out.
Yeah, pull the pin.
You have to pull the pin and follow the instructions. So when you get it, read the instructions.
I'll get my honorary badge. Let me go back to the phone lines. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Tracy, calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling, Tracy. What's on your mind?
Hi, yes. I was calling to see how often you should change your carbon monoxide detector. Is it the same?
Great question.
So for the carbon monoxide detectors, again, it's going to be based on each of your detectors. They are making 10-year ones now that are combination smoke alarm and carbon monoxide detectors. Those are... But you really need to go back to the manufacturer's instructions. There's also a test button on there that you should be using every time you spring forward or fall back for the time change to make sure that they're working.
Where should you?
How close should they be to your furnace?
See, I was about to ask the same question. We are great minds think alike, Tracy. Where should they be placed? Carbon monoxide and smoke detectors in various and sundry parts of the house.
So what we tell people is to put smoke detectors and carbon monoxide detectors on each level of your home, specifically outside each sleeping area. If you have one in the basement, I like the top of the basement stairs. It's not right next to it, but everything that comes up will rise to that level. And then it isn't a great idea right inside your kitchen, but right outside of your kitchen on that level of the house. It is also not a bad idea but not a requirement that a smoke detector or smoke alarm is in each sleeping area. Mm-hmm. If they're in the common hallway right outside, the doors are shut, that's gonna be your first alarm. But as a backup, if your door is shut and the smoke alarm goes off in your room, it will alert you earlier, which gives you more time to plan to use one of your escape plans.
Mm-hmm. There you go, Tracy. Okay, thank you.
And where can we learn about hands on heart?
Hands on heart.
So you call 311, you can schedule that for DC Fire and EMS. If not, go to our website, fems.dc.gov, and there's a link on there where you can get to that, and we will get to you. Otherwise, if you'd like to call 202-673-3320, that's the fire chief office, and we'll get you there as well.
Now, Tracy, you're in Maryland. What county are you in?
I'm in PG County.
You're in Prince George's County, so you can still call 311 in Prince George's County, and that 311 number will also direct you to the resources that you need.
Okay, great. Thank you.
And by chance, if you're visiting the District of Columbia and you want hands-on heart, we can tell you where we'll be on any given weekend, and we'd love to have you stop by.
Absolutely.
We'll teach you.
Absolutely.
Tracy, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Philip calling from Vermont. Thanks for calling, Philip. What's on your mind?
Yes, good evening, everyone. My question has to do with illegal spaces, such as basements without egress or anything like that. I heard you guys talk about first, second, and third story fire extinguishers. But I'm wondering, are you guys considering the number of illegal sort of apartments that are out there?
Ah, okay. That's an interesting question. Your thoughts, Chief?
So illegal apartments are a great concern of ours. We want all people to have affordable housing, rental housing, and it should all be safe and affordable. It shouldn't be either affordable and not safe. This is a big issue, I think, in any area across the country. So anybody that's aware of those, if they report them to the Fire Marshal's Office or DCRA, we will work together to get that property abated in a way that either makes it safe, but that's the bottom line here. We we include basements in where smoke detectors or smoke alarms, CO detectors should be as well. If it's a legal space, we treat it just like any other level of the home.
Now, he's calling from Vermont. I would imagine there are at least some national standards or guidelines regarding these kinds of things.
So there is a national building code, some of the, but every...
I mean, I'm talking about in keeping homes safe.
Yes, every room that's considered a bedroom should have a means of egress outside through a window that has some minimum dimensions of roughly 3 feet by 4 feet. It should be a certain height off the ground and should have access to the outside, that type of thing. That would be the first indicator of something that's not up to code.
Mm-hmm. Well, Philip, thank
you. Understood. Thank you, guys.
Well, thank you so much, Philip. I appreciate your phone call. Before I go back to the phone lines, I did want to talk a little bit more about the education part of, you know, not what you're just doing this, you know, this week or this month, but year round. I'm sure that in visiting homes, that there are some things that you find that give you pause, and you may have gone in with just some basic fire extinguisher, CO detector, smoke detector, and realized that there were other kinds of things, hoarding, for example, or other kinds of safety concerns. Talk to me about what people should know and what they should and should not be doing, Captain.
Well, one of the things that give us pause, great pause, in the city you mentioned, hoarding. We like to be conservative. People get a little testy when you call it hoarding. They're collectors.
Collectors. Okay.
Yes, they're collectors. Mm-hmm. But we try to help them. The city has great services out here for our citizens of the District of Columbia. We have DACL, Department of Aging and Community Living. They render service, one-time heavy-duty cleaning. They come out, they assist them with gaining access, control of their living their living conditions again, so they have a better quality of life. Mm-hmm. We educate them on that. We give them assistance to home health aides when they can't do for themselves, so they can have assistance with caring for themselves, feeding themselves, assistance with taking their medications. We educate them on how to take their medications. Mm-hmm. We provide a number of services through the fire department, with linking them with city service. The District of Columbia is doing great things for the citizens in the district.
But I'm speaking specifically of...
Yes.
Fighting fires. Because we know...
So that goes hand in hand with that. If we can educate the citizens, it prevents the fires. Because if we can assist them with cleaning the hoarding conditions, mm-hmm. it prevents the fires, the newspapers, the clutter that block the fire sockets and mounds of debris.
Yeah, and... I guess that leads to escape.
Exactly. Absolutely. It blocks the pathway of egress that causes the deaths in the homes. Mm-hmm. If we can prevent that, we don't have the tragedies.
Mm-hmm. So some of the things...
It's preventative care.
Yeah. So some of the things we look for when we're out on our community walks where we're knocking on doors is talking to our elderly residents or people with limited mobility about it. They may not be at a hoarding condition, but if your stove, next to your stove, doesn't have a safe landing place for a hot pot or where you come out of your microwave, you're subject to dropping that on yourself and getting a pretty severe burn.
Okay.
So we're looking to prevent a burn injury that way. We're also looking, unfortunately, this year was a bit of an anomaly with 9 fire deaths, and they were all not in our either young age group or old age group particularly. But for our previous years, usually what we see is elderly people, some of them even alerted to the fire by a smoke alarm, but because they have limited mobility, unable to escape the house.
Mm-hmm.
And what that means is as people age in place as a community, we have to support them. So when we're looking at how they get out of the house, we want to make sure that there isn't extra furniture in their pathways, that there isn't an extension cord running across, there isn't locks that they can't get undone where the key's missing. All of those things contribute to their ability to survive a tragedy in their house. And that's what we're looking for.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Nye, calling from D.C. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi. First, I want to just thank you all because you all show up. And I lost a parent. And before that, we had the in a very big apartment building. There was no key. There was no answer to the phone. We had to call 911, and you all showed up for a well visit, and I appreciated that. So I just want to tell y'all, I don't know why the fire department shows up first, but I'm grateful that you make way when we have family emergencies for people who are aging in place. So thank you. And then the question that I had was about roof access. I live in a walk-up, and it seems to me that the roofs have to be unlocked or something like that. People have to be able to get into the building from the roof. Do you know anything about that and how people can secure their buildings, even if that's a law?
I want to tell you that from the fire department that we are very, very sorry for your loss, and we do appreciate your gratitude for us thanking us for our service.
So as far as the building code, can you give your information to the producer offline so we can look at that? Buildings should be secured, but I need to know more about your specific situation and reference the fire code before I answered that question completely. But we'd be glad to follow up with you.
Okay. Nye, the producer, she'll pick up the call from here and get your information, and then she'll be able to pass it on to the chief. Thank you so much. I do want to ask you... Okay, this is 100 years, and fires have essentially been fought the same way. Water. Okay. Certainly, I know that there are some chemicals that are used to fight certain kinds of fires, but what, from your perspective, what is on the horizon for the future of firefighting? I mean, are there new inventions? Are there new considerations? Or is it, as far as we know, looking ahead for the next 20 years, is it still just going to be, you know, water puts out fire? Or maybe is there new technology regarding fire engines and the like that will help make this a more efficient way to fight fires?
So that's a really good question. Fire Prevention Week is this week because it is the anniversary of the Great Fire in Chicago on October 9th that burnt the city of Chicago. And as you said, the basis of putting a fire out is water. It started then with hoses, and we've grown very efficient at using firefighters to use hoses to put fires out. In the next 20 to 30 years, that's probably not changing. What will change is something we alluded to a little bit earlier. The building code will continue to evolve, but it's going to be incumbent on our communities to make sure that the buildings remain safe and in compliance with the building code, and that we continue to educate our people about the dangers of fire. In this country in particular, we have among the highest fire rates in our residential neighborhoods as anywhere in the world. It is an area in America that we can do better. And I think that is an important takeaway for us to understand. Other cultures have different views of the effect of having a fire in your house. And it is truly devastating. So it's something we need to continue to work on. But over the next 20 or 30 years, it's probably more about the building code. You won't see any real expansion of use of halon like you see in other things because of the damage it does to the environment. So building design is where it's at.
One of the things that I think, just from the from an observer's point of view, that's been troubling, and we've seen this more in the suburbs and not in the cities. This isn't really a problem in the cities, is the inability to find a fire hydrant, particularly in are wealthier neighborhoods where there aren't fire hydrants. And that means that fire trucks have to find fire hydrants, or they have to bring, you know, water trucks, you know, and the like. Why is that?
That's a great question. We are lucky in the city. DC Water has a very strong water grid. We get a good water supply in the city. I think the close-in suburbs have the same thing. As you move out, that infrastructure isn't there. People move outside of these urban areas to lower their taxes. As a result of lower taxes, you get lower services. Water may be one of those services you don't get, and you can use a well because it's one house per 5 acres and the groundwater table can support that. But it's a trade-off that you are probably subconsciously making when you buy that house. Mm-hmm. You're moving into an area where there's less services and less supply in order to get more for your dollar. And that's really what it comes down to. Some of those fire departments out there do an amazing job with tanker water shuttles and putting out fires and things like that. The fire department over the years has developed strategies for that, but there is a limit to it.
Because I remember when Senator Chuck Robb's house burned last year. Mm-hmm. That was an issue. Years and years ago, you may remember there was a huge mansion out in Anne Arundel County. This was another holiday fire. And this was the same issue where you have these huge homes, but no access. And I would imagine that under those circumstances, it is really important. And this isn't, like I said, this isn't a DC thing. This is just a fire thing, where if you live where there may not be a fire extinguisher in front of your house, like there was when I was growing up out in Prince George's County, because we used to stand on it when I was a kid. It was right there, you know. But do you have to pay special attention with prevention if you have a large house?
Well, that's one thing I was getting ready to say. Chief just said it's a trade-off. If you want the large house on the 5 to 6 to 7 8 to 10 acres and you're on well water and you don't have fire hydrants, it's preparation and planning. You need fire extinguishers because your fire department's coming, but you have to wait. Mm-hmm. So you have to be prepared.
Yeah. So on behalf of the, since this doesn't involve the district, I can make a really good pitch for my Virginia fire chief partners who are advocating every day in Virginia for a fire sprinkler law. And a fire sprinkler will help keep residential sprinklers will keep you safe. They're not going to put the fire out, but they're going to allow you to get out of your house alive and slow the fire down.
Yes. Explain that. So, if they don't put them out.
So residential there's two types of sprinkler systems. There's a residential sprinkler system, which is called a 13R system, but it's a life safety system. It activates just like a regular sprinkler system, but the water flow, it doesn't require all this extra hydraulics or extra machine to allow water to put the fire down. What it should do is keep the fire small, so in conjunction with your smoke alarm, you can get out of the house. It's life safety. The number of people that have been saved by that is very high, and very few people have died in houses that have sprinklers that are functioning. In Maryland, they have this law, so I'm not pitching for them. I'm pitching for my Virginia partners and anywhere else in the country that doesn't have a fire sprinkler law. When we talk about how things have changed over the years, there's really no reason that houses shouldn't be built with sprinklers. Especially the 13R system. They work off your standard house pressure. They are relatively inexpensive to put in, and they will save your life.
You mentioned that your house in the district is as old as my house in Baltimore, 85 years old. And, you know, I think about this often because my house is brick and stone. Mm-hmm. You know, I have the original floors. No, you cannot buy my house.
My house was built in 1940.
Right. My house was built in 1937. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, 1937. So, you know, plaster ceiling.
Yes.
Plaster walls, you know, and the like. Are they more or less susceptible to fire hazards? Or, you know, is there anything else that those of us who live in older homes need to pay particular attention to that
people in newer homes do not.
So the things that we need to pay attention to in older homes are the electrical systems. Mm-hmm. If they were built in 85 years ago, they are very old now. Those wires can be brittle. Occasionally, I'm sure you may have a short circuit in a socket, and hopefully it's contained to that socket. But over time, we're going to have to look at replacing those with modern electrical systems that have ground fault interruption, that have solid grounds, things like that. Three-wire system. So it's all of us.
It's not cheap.
No, it's not cheap. But,
no, it is not cheap.
If you have a short circuit, that's when you should always... You need to talk to your electrician about that and figure out what the status of your system is.
Yeah.
And usually your furnaces, if you haven't checked that, a lot of those houses, the furnace systems in those houses.
Well, no, I have a newer furnace.
Okay.
I have two wood-burning fireplaces. And so, all of those things are part of the inspection. And we didn't even talk about wood-burning fireplaces and chimneys and having those
cleaned every year. Yes.
Yeah. Final thoughts from you. I've got about a minute or so, Captain.
Final thoughts from me. Make sure your family is safe. Plan. Not only should you plan medically, plan your escape route for fires. Make sure your children, your elders, if you're not home, make sure a neighbor knows your plan and knows to account for everyone.
Mm-hmm. Chief, final thought from you?
Fire won't wait. Plan your escape and look out for your neighbors.
Oh, okay. And it rhymes. There you go. Well, I appreciate both of you coming in, John Donnelly and Captain Lakeisha Lacey. Thank you so much. Very, very important information, obviously, from the number of calls that we did receive, that it's something that is on the minds of people, and perhaps maybe not on their minds, which is why they're calling in, and now you're putting it front and center. So thank you both for spending some time with us. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having us.
That is the Daily Drum for this Tuesday, October 11th. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.